It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hi guys, unfortunately I think I'm going to miss the podcast recording this week. Got to do some vetty things up country. And just thought I'd try and record some random thoughts in an Eddie Stevens style, but with less bitter talk about an ex-wife and masturbating dogs and stuff like that. So yeah, keep it a little bit cleaner. I haven't watched a huge amount of rugby, to be honest, which is one of the things I wanted to talk about. And that's, we just get to this point of the season where, for me, kind of rugby just dips off a bit in interest. Like, don't get me wrong, I still love rugby. I spent the whole day yesterday doing the New England Rugby Coaching Award, 6 hours out in the sunshine, chucking a ball around, talking about coaching kids. Really enjoyable. I still really love rugby. Just the Premiership just loses a bit of interest for me. And I think it's because there's so many meaningless games and there's so many teams that are kind of mailing it in to the point where Gloucester haven't even played for 2 weeks because they've gone and deliberately caught COVID to give themselves a bit of time off and go on holiday early because the season doesn't really matter for them. I barely noticed the fact that there's only 4 matches being played this weekend. And for a lot of those teams, it's their last games. It doesn't really make a difference whether they go positive or negative. And realistically, it's been a bit like this for a bit longer this season, which I think really does shout against the whole kind of ring fencing idea. I get the counter argument that a lot of people are making in that, barring Saracens at the moment, any team that comes up, it's really going to be a bit of a yo-yo team. They're going to be up and down. They're probably going to be up and then down for quite some time because they don't have the resources and there's not enough funding working its way down through the pyramid to keep that stability and have a strong enough teams coming up without a massive financial backer. But for me, as much of the jeopardy is about who goes down rather than who goes up. And I think when you get to the point where you ring fence, for half of the teams, they don't really have anything to play for the last few games of the season. They're either secure in Europe and not going to make the semis, or they're safe from relegation and they're not going to make Europe. And it just gets to the point where it kind of ruins the tail end of the season a little bit for me. But anyway, that's enough on that. I did watch the Exeter Sale game. I'll say it again, Sale turning into a really good side. Super intensity in the way they were playing. They were quite unfortunate with a couple of injuries in the first kind of 20 minutes or so. But playing this real intense, Saracens like rugby, to be honest. It's that model that's been driven by Saracens that Sanderson's taken up there. But it's super impressive how they deliver it. They are very good at it, and AJ McGinty, I think, is probably the perfect 10 for them in that regard. He's doing exactly what he should be doing. I think in that regard, I've got a lot of time for Sale, and Exeter just seemed a bit flat. And it wasn't really until they got the red card for Skinner that Exeter really seemed to kind of get a bit of buzz about them. And it was the same last week against Northampton. That, in fact, it's been the same for most of the season. They're a bit flat and they're kind of relying on fitness, core skills, etc. to get enough wins under their belts and enough results, positive results to get them into the semis and the playoffs. And yeah, I don't know whether it's coming off the back of everything that's happened with COVID, or whether there's certain key players that aren't really able to kind of pump things up. But they it seems to be they need a trigger to get them going. And part of that's got to sit on Baxter's shoulders, I suppose. But when they do get going, they're pretty much unbeatable. And it just seems a bit strange that they're a bit flat, and I'm sure they're trying their hardest to work out what's causing that. But it made for a pretty interesting game of rugby, to be honest. Good game of rugby, enjoyable to watch. Again, going against all these people who believe that for a game of rugby to be enjoyable, it's got to be 63 points to 27 or something bonkers. Don't want to spend too long talking about the red cards, or the red card rather, other than to say I think Carl Dixon potentially went a bit lenient on Dave Ewers in the first half. Bearing in mind all that we've said over the last few weeks, that actually a mistimed or a mistake tackle, we probably don't think should be a red card. I don't think should probably be a red card. But with working within the framework and the flow chart and the rules that are there at the moment, I don't think, as much as Hammersley was spinning, I don't think him spinning materially changed the direction of his head or the angle of his head. And I think Ewers was probably a little bit lucky there. I think the yellow card was the right result, but I don't think I'd have grumbled too much or had too many groans for grumbling if it was red. Whereas I think the Skinner one was completely the opposite, where I'm pretty sure it was Ben Moon's tackled Faf de Klerk. His head's dropped about 2 foot from a fairly low height already, coming directly towards Skinner. Now, the physics of him hinging at his hips and the time at which it takes to do that, I don't think he could physically have got down low enough to not have had initial contact with the clerk's head or neck area. His literally probably his only option to avoid that would be to have stepped away from him as he was falling, which is a completely alien concept. So, yeah, I'm not convinced by that as a red card. I see why it's contact to the head and something needs to be given, but I think Dixon probably got them both the wrong way around. I mean, let's be honest, he isn't the greatest referee there is. Like many people, I thought when he first started he was pretty good as a ref, but I think his performances have tailed off fairly quickly, or certainly plateaued. And I'd say that they're probably as bad as anybody else in the Premiership, if not worse. Sorry about that, but he's probably one of the worst referees out there. But there is a relatively small pool of referees that the Premiership can pull from, and I think that's part of the issue, to be honest. But yeah, obviously Exeter ended up winning that game, got themselves a home semi-final rematch following week. I think Exeter will. Sorry, it's my brother trying to get a hold of me. I think Exeter will probably repeat the result again, because I think they've seen that bit of motivation to keep driving it forwards. But I mean, if Sale do go and win it, then I'm sure it'll be because they're playing really well. The other game of note or point that I wanted to make, or a couple of points, was, I mean, Harlequins stuck a boatload of points on a team again this week. Don't get me wrong, Harlequins are a really super attacking force for rugby, but they are very, very soft. They're very soft in the rolling mauls. They're very soft around the fringes, and they're very soft broken play. It's Newcastle they're playing, and Radwan scored a try where broken field, and I think he got the ball somewhere around the halfway line. And he broke through about four or five half tackles. Now, Radwan's rapid, and he'll see his space, but there was a lot of weak shoulders there. A lot of weak shoulders, a lot of forearms, a lot of not necessarily getting close enough. They just don't look like they enjoy the contact side of rugby. It looks like they'd be much happier playing sevens, most of their players. And part of that's got to come from culture of the club, And you see all of the good teams that dominate, whether that be South Africa when they're playing at their best, whether that be the All Blacks when they were playing fantastically well, the Hurricanes, Exeter, Saracens. When you see these teams that do well and do well consistently, roll the clock back to the 90s and both Leicester and Bath, and in particular Leicester, they were built on really solid foundations. They were built on a solid heavyweight, slightly bordering on the edge of being a bit punchy front five, and a back row that just loved the dirty work. And when you look at the comparison between Sale and Exeter and Harlequins, Sale and Exeter have got that in an absolute abundance, and Harlequins just don't have it. And it's not a lack of, it's not the wrong players. I can't believe it's the wrong players, because the physically there's not much between the players. It's about kind of the attitude and how and the culture of them. And I think it's why you're seeing massive strides being made at Leicester with Borthwick there. You've got Sanderson at Sale, who's taken them from a side that was very good at home and flattering to deceive away from home, under the previous regime, that is now absolutely flying. And you've got Exeter, who are doing exactly the same, and I fully envisage Saracens to be doing it again next year. It's based, the very foundations of it are on having some people who thrive on dominating contact. And I just don't see that at Harlequins. And I mean, Christ, Harlequins may scrape a win against Bristol. I don't think they will. I'd be very surprised if they do. They're not going to scrape a win against Bristol and then scrape a win against either Exeter or Sale and end up winning the championship. And I don't think they ever will until they get a bit more old school grumpiness in the front five and a bit more of a back row who want to absolutely dominate some collisions. They've got some great groundwork exponents. They've got some great opportunist turnover people. But those opportunities only ever come up if you dominate the collision in the first place, and I think that's something that they're missing. Obviously, we've glossed over Bristol because they haven't played, but I'm sure Pat Lamb will tell you that the importance of their front five and someone like Dan Thomas, who will make a shed load of tackles every game and push people back with his tackles, and that kind of aggressive defence. Defence ultimately is what wins championships. So yeah, that's the Premiership really. Saracens eating in the Championship playoff. I mean, Christ, it's as one-sided a playoff game as you're likely to see. But then, as people have said, that Ealing side would do a number on a reasonable proportion of the Premiership teams, particularly if they got a couple of signings in, and they would be certainly worthy of getting an opportunity at it. But they're playing against a team rammed full of internationals and top internationals. So yeah, fair play to Saracens. They've taken their punishment and spent their time in the championship. They've won it quite convincingly, I would guess, from the playoff games. Only lost that initial game against the Pirates when they were playing effectively a second team. And they deserve to come back up, and yeah, they'll probably be teased about the financial irregularities until my generation can't talk any longer. But as far as I'm concerned, what's done is done. They've paid their price. And I think the Premiership will be a better brand for having them in it. My biggest issue is the fact that PRL and the RFU will bend over backwards to get them in it, to the point where the day before or the morning of that Championship playoff game, you've got them coming out and saying that Ealing won't even get promoted even if they win it, because their ground's not up to standards. But I mean, that's no different from the way it's always been. The rules are a bit of a farce in that most teams don't get 10,000 to every game anyway. But they would have found some way. They wouldn't have turned down promotion to not kind of potentially borrow somebody else's stadium whilst they're looking at what they can do about their own. But yeah, that's a bit of a farce anyway. And then we've got the news today that the RFU are going to be trialling next year reducing tackle heights to below the waist, which is just fucking ridiculous as far as I'm concerned for a number of reasons. Knees, hips, things that move that are bony will be clonking with heads, and I think it will actually be worse for injuries. We've got a number of measures that have been put in place to try and reduce the risk of injuries and concussions, and more importantly, CTEs, so repeated concussions and the knock-on effects. And we haven't given them a chance to see whether they've made a blind bit of difference anyway. And physically, temporally and physically on the pitch, there are just some times where you cannot get below the waist of a player. You got Luke Carandicky picking and going from 3 metres out. How are you going to get below his waist? It's just not physically possible whilst keeping yourself onside. It'll ruin the game of rugby. And the reality is, if that's the case, you're going to have a load of people who are 4'6" running around playing rugby because they'll be so much harder to tackle. But I don't know. I'm kind of losing it with the desire to ruin rugby. And I suppose that's as good a time as any to say thank you. And hopefully I'll be there with the rest of the team next week.
Hello, good evening and welcome to this week's Mall Over podcast. The only rugby podcast gives you the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Apple and Google Play and all of those other podcast recommendation stores. I'm joined this week on a Thursday, unusually, because basically, we didn't really watch any of the games last weekend. But I'm joined by nicest man in Cornish Rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, mate.
Nice to see you. And I'm also joined live from a travel tavern somewhere near Southampton, Chinese Lensman. Not at all racist.
Get a can of Fanta delivered to my room.
I just hope you got your big plate, Doug. You're there for the World Test Championship, mate?
Yeah, to watch the rain delays at the World Test Championship. Nice. Might as well be the World Chess Championship.
Well, you never know. There might be some of that going on. Indians love a bit of chess, don't they, apparently? That's neither confirmed or denied. This is the third podcast this week from the Mall Over podcast conglomerate, which may be the first time ever. Adam and I did a long snapper earlier in the week, basically shaming England's test match performances. There was a long snapper the other night, and then here we are to preview
long
the
snapper twice for us.
Did I?
Yeah.
I meant long leg. Did I say long snapper instead of long leg?
Yeah.
Then I am a dickhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
that's that seems to be unanimous.
I rest my case, Your Honour. With that in mind, then, should we talk about some Premiership semi-final previews?
I mean, if you have to, I've been quite enjoying having 4 or 5 days without any thoughts of rugby. It's been quite nice.
Have you really? Why is that? Why have you enjoyed not thinking about rugby?
Because I've worked on rugby every week for the last year and a half, nearly 2 years.
Oh, all right.
Keep with the light. Exception of the first lockdown.
But at least this weekend we're getting to the pinnacle of the season. We're really at the business end now. And if last weekend there's anything to go by, and I only watched the highlights of Exeter versus Sale, but if that is anything to go by, this weekend is going to be an absolute titanic battle. Before we get into it, I've asked a couple of friends of the pod, one who is entirely neutral, to give a view on Sale, and former Exeter Chief Chris Bentley, who's going to give his view on the Exeter Chiefs.
Hello, you good folk at Mall Over, JB here. I have been speaking to many neutrals in and around the Manchester / Sale area, and there seems to be quite an appetite for what I would call the pre-final of the Gallagher Premiership. Now, the reason it's a pre-final, not a semi-final, is because whoever wins this will then have to play another game against either Harlequins or Bristol, but that won't be the final. This game on the weekend is the final. It strikes me that Steel sharpens steel. These two teams are phenomenally good. They're phenomenally physical. They play the game in the way the game is designed to be played. But I think Sale might have the edge this weekend. In fact, I'm pretty certain they do. The loss against Exeter last weekend could have been psychologically damaging for Sale, because Sale did everything right. And even when they got everything right, they still didn't win. The areas that Sanderson has pointed out that he needs to strengthen are the set piece. I understand that's all they've been doing this week. And I think they'll find a way in order to combat what Exeter do really well. Interestingly, Sanderson spoke not of the scrum, which I would have spoke about, but the maul defence. And he thinks in terms of physicality, they have parity, but they just haven't practiced the technicality of what they need to do enough around the maul area, which I think is quite an interesting thing. In terms of selection, this is really interesting now, because these two teams will be playing a week after the last time they played, but they will be far less strong than they were first time round. Sale Sharks are missing AJ McGinty. Cam Neal sounds like he's out for a long, long time. And it's uncertain whether Aka van der Merwe will be back, although, allegedly, he'll be given every chance to. And there's also the other element of this, which no one's really talking about. Lou Diego might play. If Lou Diego plays, that is enormous. Obviously, on the Exeter side, they're missing Skinner. They're definitely missing Ewers. I think, is it Kirsten or the Marlin might be out? But here's a thought I've had. How big do Exeter Chiefs need to be in the back five in order to accommodate Sam Simmons? Don't know if that's an unfair thing to say, but it does strike me that they just get the biggest men in the back five in order to make sure that Sam Simmons can play. Now, when they start depleting that stock of enormous bodies, does Sam Simmons' strength then become a weakness? And if so, are they at that tipping point where they need a little bit more reinforcement? I imagine they might be drafting in Don Armand from out in the cold. That would be very interesting. Sale Sharks' biggest admission is going to be AJ McGinty. No doubt about that. And they'll be replacing him directly with Rob Dupree. This is certainly the implication that Sanderson gave yesterday. Rob Dupree is a guy with all the physicality of his brothers and the passing ability of, well, his brothers. So how that's going to go down, I don't know. I don't think it's a like-for-like replacement. Other than that, I think in the back line, Sale have got the beating of Exeter. I think up front, they've got the beating of Exeter. I think they'll learn from what they did wrong. And I think they'll win the pre-final in order to lift the Gallagher Premiership trophy. Well, not officially this weekend, but it may as well be officially this weekend. So that's my little preview of the game. Hope you all have a wonderful day.
Okay, so here goes. My name's Chris Bentley, and I used to play for the Chiefs 10 years ago now, but I was employed for a previous 6 years after that in the corporate team for a 13-year career, 125 first-team games, though only 98 were in the league. I have let go of the fact that selection for the league games is all that counts for the Centurions board, honestly. Moving on. I think that the big game was played last weekend. I think Sale came with their gun team looking to take everything back to the AJ Bell. And unfortunately, they lost their magical unicorn, as Alex Sanderson calls him, AJ McGinty. And I just don't see, with Rob van der Pries, they're going to be anywhere near as impressive to take on the Chiefs. It's going to be who can handle with the knocks that have been taken out of them, because Chiefs have lost a big chunk of their back row. Vermeulen's out injured. Ewers is suspended. Skinner is going to be suspended. So I'm not sure if Kirsten's going to be fit or not. There's a phone call in the background. I'll walk away. I'm not sure if we're going to have any of our gun back rower than Simo. However, I think that the Chiefs losing the big box in the back row is not as dangerous as Sale losing McGinty. And I honestly think that Chiefs are going to comfortably win this. I think you could see in Sanderson's demeanour in the post-match interview how much it dented him. And they are a completely different team without McGinty. All of the good things came from him playing well. I think the Chiefs coming down again the following week will be there. And I've noticed a huge amount of rhetoric from Sanderson talking about emotion and brotherhood and all of this. And he's trying to engender the Saracens mantras that made them very strong. That takes time to build. The Chiefs have got 15 years of building a culture that is absolutely tough as teak. And I think that Sale know that they're going to throw everything at the Chiefs. The Chiefs will eat it all up and go straight back at them. The fact that Knowlesy might also make the mix off the bench, bringing a bit of impact. I can't see anything beyond the Exeter Chiefs comfortably winning this one. And I'm more excited, in all honesty, to see how Bristol and Quins do, because Quins decided early not to push for a home semi-final, rested everyone. And I think that Chiefs are going to grind out a comfortable win. Harlequins Bristol is going to be fascinating, because you've literally got two swashbuckling teams. The Quins even more so, that just go, if you score 50, we'll score 55. And I'm fancying Quins for a really crazy upset. There you go. That's it. Chica chica. Hope that works. Happy to record again if it's not up to standard. I'm now getting my confidence, as you can tell. Ciao.
Right. Interesting.
A lot of chat. I like getting other people to do our work for us.
A little bit. But I thought, you know.
That's it. Let's move on to the other game.
And now Bristol Quins. What do you, you know, how do you see this one, Ben? That it's going to be two very different semi-finals, but Exeter without Ewers and without Skinner and likely without Vermeulen, does that of course it disadvantages them. How do you see them setting up to try and get the best out of Sam Simmons without those big boys there?
I think they'll have to really... It's difficult because I don't think Sale really kept a lot of their powder dry. I think they'll probably have to come at them the same way that they did on Saturday. So possibly they might start both Curries, possibly. And I think they would have to then worry about their breakdown, which is something Exeter have been caught out a couple of times in the last few weeks. You know, whether it's due to referees sort of picking them up a little bit or just the speed of the Curries. So I think that's where they might come a little bit unstuck if they're short of a few back row players. Did you say Vermeulen's not fit?
Well, Vermeulen, the talk is Vermeulen is injured and unlikely to make it. Obviously, we'll see tomorrow when they name the teams. Obviously, Ewers and Skinner are both banned. Interesting to see, like, this week, there's been a lot of rhetoric from rugby Twitter, obviously, about, oh, look at the audacity of Exeter for appealing those bans. How dare they? Why should they? Who the fuck do they think they are? Rob Baxter's this, and they should never be appealing those. It's the law. They tackle lower. When in actual fact, both guys got two-week bans, right? So both two-week bans would have meant that they missed the final anyway and the semi-final. So literally an appeal is a shot to fuck all, isn't it? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, without getting into it on those two red cards, I mean, I can't say I've seen the Ewers one, but the Skinner one, it's just typical of most of the red cards this season. I get it. That's the way they're refereeing it. It's a red card. Personally, I don't think that it should be a red card because it's an accident and it's not far off a legal tackle. And it's not even worth getting into conversations anymore with people because people have either decided it is or it isn't. And to me, I don't think it's improving the game. And I think that they would be a lot better off making sure people don't play once they're concussed rather than sending people off right, left and centre. Yeah. But we've got into that a million times. I just think it does stretch Exeter a little thin. And if Vermeulen and Kirsten were playing with Simmons, I'd back that back row, I think, because it'd be hard as a bag of hammers. But if they've got to fill in, I mean, who do you think would come in? Would it be...
Could be Armand. could be capstick.
Capstick, yeah. I mean, you'd almost sort of give the balance of power then to Sale, wouldn't you?
Ben, is Duke enjoying his dinner there, is he?
He is. He's loving his dinner, yeah.
Let me tell you who might be a left field inclusion.
Go on, then.
Aaron Hinckley.
Aaron Hinckley. Is he the lad that's... has he been there a while?
England under 20s, joined from Gloucester at the start of this year.
Yeah.
Last season. Haven't seen hide nor hair of him, so I don't know if he's injured, but hell of a player.
Maybe they're just looking at working him in. And the fact that they've had Ewers, Vermeulen, Kirsten in such great form, Sam Skinner as well, that they just thought, well, you know, we don't need to throw him in just yet. But
I mean, talking of Sale, I think he's off again. He'd stop. I mean, McGinty played out of his skin on Saturday, but then he picked up an injury, didn't he?
Yeah, he's out. So is Cam Neild as well, who's out for quite a long time, I believe. And there's a chance that Van der Merwe might be out as well.
Really? I mean, without him and without McGinty, I think life will be very difficult for them. I've actually been quite impressed with Faf this season. Like, he's reined it in a little bit, and actually I think he's played pretty well. Have you seen he's had his haircut?
Yeah. Do you think he's going to be like Samson?
What, Lee?
Not Samson Lee. No, he like lose all his power when his hair's cut off. I mean, it's a bit of an odd, well, just a bit strange, isn't it? Maybe he's just had enough.
I think, to be honest, I think Exeter can cope with their absences better than Sale can cope with theirs. The only thing I would say is they didn't really use Tuilagi very much. So if they pick him and they've got that route one option, that'll make life a lot easier for whoever comes in at 10.
Well, it'll be Dupria, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess it will be, and we all know how much Doug rates him. yeah, you've got to make Exeter favourites at home. I mean, they didn't play very well last week until they went down to 14, bizarrely enough, and then they became almost unbeatable. I thought Townsend came on and made a difference, and maybe the intensity that Sale played at just, you know, was too much for them to keep up for 80 minutes. But you'd think Exeter probably will game plan it and probably it'll be a bit more comfortable for them.
Doug, that's obviously an Exeter sort of game plan, isn't it? Bringing a slightly more high-intensity Stu Townsend off the bench instead of Jack Maunder. I know you commented on the level of neck on the Exeter Chiefs last Friday.
Weird pictures, man.
They were weird, weren't they? And Jack Maunder needing scaffolding did make me giggle. but like Maunder is he's very Wrigglesworth-esque, isn't he? You don't see him snipe very much. He's inherently a passing nine. And then they bring Townsend on, who does offer that sniping threat. And they did, you know, as I say, only I watched on the highlights, but they did look a more threatening team when they had that sort of that option at nine.
Is Townsend coming on with a brief like, this is what we're doing now, do this?
Because yeah, well,
I'm not for a minute having that he's a better nine than Jack Maunder.
Well, no, it's horses for courses.
There's another Maunder as well.
Sam Maunder, I think. I think well, he's not there. I don't know. I think he was a 10, wasn't he? Or a fullback.
Anyway, he's not a better scrum half. There's no question of that. I just think potentially he had a different brief to Maunder. I think Maunder's one of the best in the country. Personally, I'd have him around the England squad. And of the nines that are available for all four clubs in the semis, he'd probably be the one that I picked. I think Stuart Townsend's just had a good game.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Ben Youngs, Danny Kerr type scenario, isn't it? Like with England, you bring on somebody who's a little bit more.
No, but I don't think Maverick. I don't think he is more of whatever. I think he came on with a different brief to what Morden has started the game with.
Right. Okay.
If you've been game planning all week to play nine in a certain way, you can't necessarily just switch that off. And maybe somebody sat on the bench with direct access to coaching decisions and sort of being privy to the change in game plan can bring that to the game, where it's harder to get that message to a nine that's already playing, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think Baxter's particularly good at changing game plans. You know, and we've said before, he's not even shy about telling them on the TV what he's going to do after half time. And I think Doug's probably right. They probably just said, look, you're going to have to tie that back row down a bit, especially because, you know, they started with Neild and Curry, but then they had Curry. So
I think undoubtedly they're going to go with Curry and Curry.
Two Curries.
Yeah.
Two Curries, one Rice, or two Curries, one Bread?
Two Curries, one Bread, mate.
Two Curries, one Rice, one Bread.
One Rice, one Bread. Hurrah, hurrah. Two Curries, one Rice.
You strike me as a prawn butterfly man, Ben.
No, I don't like to risk prawns from a takeaway. I like, nah.
Very risk averse.
Yeah, so, you know.
Stick with chicken.
There's a fullback if ever I've seen one.
Yeah. A few more games on the wing, I'd be going for prawns, but you know, stick with the classics.
Back to Exeter Sale quickly then. How do you see it going on Saturday, Doug? Obviously, Sale went to Exeter last week with everything they had to try and take it back to the AJ Bell. That's my opinion. Do you think they've got anything left in the tank, or are they going to go to that well one more time?
You know, I'm speaking without qualified information because I didn't see the game because I was elsewhere. But it would strike me that for Sale to have gone to Sandy Park and looked like they were dominating, they threw the kitchen sink at Exeter. And as we discussed last week, they've sort of shot their bolt. So I don't think they can play in a different way. So Exeter know how to combat that now. And they took them to cleaners in the second half, a man down. So if I was Sale, I'd probably be very concerned about that. Especially having lost who the... I think you can write Sale off just on the fact that McGinty won't be playing because Rob Dupree's shit.
They've got to play a different game out of 10.
Well, they'll have to play off Faf, in my opinion. I would imagine you'll see a lot of Tuilagi or Van Rensburg at first receiver.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to just use route one with Tuilagi and the two Duprees and really attack the breakdown when Exeter have got the ball. That's really their hope, is to disrupt Exeter's possession. Because their forwards did have the nudge on Exeter until about the hour mark last time. So, you know, win some penalties and almost out Exeter by getting it into the corner and maybe get a few points that way. But I think I agree with both of you. I think they've unloaded both barrels now. And I with those injuries and with Exeter having another week to have a look at them, I think Exeter have got to be pretty strong favourites.
You ever see one of those sort of comedy fights where a bloke punches someone, he like gets all hyped up and punches him, and then he cuts to the bloke who's just sort of turned his head, and then he sort of looks back at him and then crushes his head into a pulp? That.
Yeah. I liken it sort of akin to Sylvester Stallone in Over the Top, if you've ever seen that. With the arm wrestling movie.
No, I've never seen it.
What? Get on it, by the way. And he has this move.
I about arm wrestling.
Mate, it's a good film. Well, it's a Sylvester Stallone film. But he's got this move where he's in like an arm wrestling champion and he comes back from adversity, obviously. And then he's got this move where he kind of grips over the top and he's just about to lose like the world arm wrestling championships. And he does this move and he thinks the guy thinks he's going to win. And all of a sudden Sylvester Stallone comes back and slams him. And he turns his hat backwards, goes over the top. And it's almost like a symbolism. As soon as he turns his hat backwards, you know, it's in trouble.
Russ, are you concussed?
Yeah, mate, that film sounds absolutely shit.
I never thought
I'd hear the phrase "the arm wrestling movie."
I can't believe you've not seen it.
Was it on a double bill with the Paper Scissors Stone movie?
It was mid 80s with like it was around the same time as oh god.
Chess the movie.
No, the first
Backgammon Revenge.
It was after after First Blood and between maybe after First Blood 2.
So between the two Rambo movies, he made a movie about.
I don't know the exact dates. I'm just saying it was like mid 80s. It was when Schwarzenegger was making Commando and Predator, and he was rivaling it with a movie about arm wrestling. Apparently,
just had a random thought. You know, it'd make a good Wogan in the movie adaptation of Wogan.
Who?
Bryan Cranston.
I mean, that's just come from absolutely
nowhere. But it'd
be Michael Sheen, wouldn't it?
No, he can't do everyone, Ben.
I think he'd give it a good go. Right.
Marlon Wayans in one of his films.
What? Just play everyone.
Yeah.
Or Martin Lawrence at Big Mama's House.
Wogan the movie. You'd need an Ollie Reed, wouldn't you? And a George Best.
Yeah.
That weird guy that was on the Antiques Roadshow.
What, everyone?
Just you, Ben.
I mean, I'm talking about arm wrestling movies and you're talking about the Antiques Roadshow. What have we become? Very quickly then, prediction, Ben, for Exeter Sale?
Exeter by 15.
Doug?
Not by that many, but Exeter. Maybe 7.
I think it'll be closer than we all think, but I'm pretty sure Exeter will sneak it. For the fundamental fact that I think that Sale threw everything they had at Exeter last week and they still couldn't get over the line. And as mentioned, without AJ McGinty, it's going to be an unbelievable ask for them. So, yeah. Exeter for the win. Let's move on then very quickly to the second semi-final, which is at Ashton Gate, Bristol versus Harlequins. And before we have a little chat about it, I'd like to welcome friend of the pod, Ryan Keeshaw, and Tony, who's one of the hosts of Bears Beyond the Gate, as well as Joe Breaker, who is one of the rugby at Rugby Quins people on Twitter and one of our fancy rugby draft.
Hi guys, thanks very much for having me back on. Missed you all. Hopefully we will catch up soon. Just to talk about Bristol's semi-final game, I think this is completely different to the last season when we had to go to Wasps away and were completely schooled and dominated by them. I think we've just been consistent over the season, but there are some interesting points. I think my first point would be selection. Pat's now got a pretty full fit squad. Who is going to miss out? Does he start with Siali in the centre or Piers O'Connor? Or does he have Piers O'Connor on the bench? These are brilliant headaches for Pat to have. I know that Kyle Sinclair's back. And also know that Sir Charles has been revving it up in training, apparently. Also, we have the big debate at scrum half. Does he go with Andy Urin, who's been consistent and brilliant all through the season, or Harry Randall, who can actually inspire those magic moments like he did against Leicester, where he ran through the whole team to score? Brilliant individual moment. I think the other thing that we're facing is the rest weekend, which was enforced on us by the COVID break by London Irish. Does that play in our favour, the team, you know, were rested, or the fact that we haven't had the match game time to actually get our tactics back into place, which comes onto my third point, which is form. All the other teams, and fair to Quinns, have been really increasing their form going into this, whereas we've dipped a bit, I fear. Hopefully we can pull it back, and we had the big match experiences, especially from going away to Toulon and winning down there without any fans. So my last point, I think that the crowd, especially the Bristolian crowd, who are very noisy at Ashton Gate, will make a real difference. So I'm predicting, predictably, a Bristol win. But I think it's going to be a fascinating match. And obviously, Harlequins will throw the kitchen sink at us. I just don't think their defence is up to it. Thanks a lot, guys. And look forward to hearing from you soon. Cheers. Bye.
Hi, it's Tony Cox from the Bears Beyond the Gate podcast. Like most Bristol fans, I'm pretty confident that we're going to get the job done against Harlequins and get to Twickenham. Pat Lamb said earlier in the week that he's got 94% of his senior squad available for selection. That means we're going to put out probably the strongest 23 that we've put out all season. That's not underestimating Harlequins either. We know the likes of Dombrandt, Kerr and Smith can change a game. But we're pretty sure we've got the attacking power to get the job done. In fact, we think this is the people's semi-final. This will be the one to watch. Lots of fast, free-flowing rugby. Meanwhile, Exeter versus Sale is going to be a hard physical battle. If it was Harry Potter, it would be the Dementors against the Death Eaters. So, Bristol, confident of a win. We're looking forward to a trip to Twickers and picking up our first Premiership title.
So, Saturday is Harlequins' first Premiership semi-final since 2014. If you'd asked me, would we get into the semi-finals after our hammering against Exeter at the beginning of the season, I'd have laughed in your face. So, the fact we've made it here is an amazing achievement for us. We're obviously missing some of our key players throughout the season, so I don't think we'd have got here without Andre Esterhazen. I think he is world class. Personally, I think he's the second best inside centre in the world. It's just unfortunate for him that the best inside centre in the world is Damian Deolando, who also plays for South Africa. So we're missing him. We're missing, obviously, Will Evans, who, again, has been tremendous this year. But I've been incredibly impressed by Jack Kenningham, who's stepped in for him. I think Kenningham's got a bit of Evans about him, but also reminds me a bit of Chris Robshaw. I'm sure some people argue he's too slow then, but he's a really, really good flanker for us, 20, 21-year-old. And Mike Brown, club talisman, who's obviously off at the end of the season, and Tyrone Green has done a really great job replacing him. He looks adept at fullback or wing. So missing those guys. Despite that, though, I just have a sneaky feeling we might have a chance. It might be a case of pre-game excitement, but I think we do have a chance to maybe get one over on Bristol here. I don't think they've been at their fluent best the last few weeks. Didn't play last week as well because of the COVID game against London Irish. So whether they're a little cold or not, it could be argued. It's one of those we've got a puncher's chance for. So I'd probably put us, maybe it's really head over heart, probably an 80-20 chance, with 80% being Bristol, 20% being Quinns. But that's 1 in 5. And so we could win 1 in 5 of these games. And we might well win at the weekend. If we do, I think our scrum's going to be on top form. I think front row of Marler, Baldwin and Lowe, possibly as good as the league's got form-wise right now. Wilco Lowe is massively underrated as well, cornerstone of the pack. So they've got to have a good game, but we've also just got to run things off Danny Kerr and Marcus Smith as well. So my heart definitely says Harlequins. Head, I think we've got a 1 in 5 shot, but it might be that 1 in 5. So I think we might do it. Maybe Quinns by 4 is where I'm going to go for the game on Saturday.
So there we go. The Bristol people think Bristol are going to win easily. Joe is just hoping that Quinns can put up a good show, and he thinks they might sneak it. Doug, you've spent probably more time at Ashton Gate than most people this season, I would imagine, other than Bristol themselves in your line of work. Do you think this is going to be as comfortable for Bristol as everybody thinks?
It's a tough one, man. Like, I really don't like Harlequins for obvious reasons that we've been through a thousand times on this podcast. I'm not going to go through them again. They're all cunts. I mean, the massive circle wank at the end of the game last week was absolutely unbearable, but I'm not going to say too much more about that. They're all cunts. But what they do have is the... I mean, it's a super rugby match, right? So it's going to be whoever scores last.
It's whether Quins can keep pace with Bristol, I think. I think Bristol in defence is slightly better. But if anything, do you think having that week off, that COVID week off that Bristol was supposed to play the London Irish, do you think that's going to have an impact, either positive or negative, Ben?
It's a weird one. Like, you look at the NFL.
It doesn't help in the NFL, does it?
Not really. And I'm not sure it will help here. But the problem with these games is they're ridiculous and they shouldn't be happening. You know, Bristol have won the league. They don't need to beat Harlequins in a semi-final and then whoever in the final to have won the league. They've already won it. It's three games that don't need to happen. And in player welfare terms, there, I've just saved you six concussions. But the fact is, they've got to play them. It's the one thing I would say is it's incredible how quickly the halo slips. You know what I mean? I'm getting away from what I think is going to happen in the game, but you go back a year and look at Exeter, like the public perception of Exeter and Bristol, where it was then, and now look at it after what's happened in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, with Henry Slade, Pat Lamb at Leicester. You know, there's rumours going around that it was convenient for both sides to have some COVID cases for that Bristol-London Irish game because the Irish qualified for Europe and Bristol got a week off. There may or may not have been some stuff about London Irish players going out on the piss on the Saturday when their game was cancelled. So I'm getting away from the point, but what I'm trying to say is this game is... The only thing I can see happening in this game is there just being tri-tennis and a few people get injured. And if the wrong people get injured for Bristol, then the winner of Sale and Exeter wins the league, which is a nonsense because Bristol have been best all season.
Yeah, Ben?
I think if Quins defend the way they've defended in the last couple of games I've seen them, I'm thinking of the Bath game in particular, Bristol will carve them to pieces because Bath didn't play particularly well, but they got back into the game four or five times with, you know, almost length of the pitch tries. You know, they were breaking the line at ease, and Bristol are a far better oiled machine than Bath are. And if you break the line and Redrada's anywhere around, or Piatow's anywhere around, you're just going to leak tries. So unless Quins shore up the defence, they could ship 40 or 50. I just think if you look through that the two teams, you could probably argue that Bristol are better in 12 or 13 positions out of the 15. You'd probably only say 10, and Marler for his faults would be standout and get into the Bristol team.
Yeah, Marcus Smith can't do it all on his own, can he?
And no.
Unfortunately for Quins, people like you, I think it's likely that Urin will probably start. I'm pretty sure. I mean, as good as Randall played against Leicester the other week, Andy Urin's been stand out week in, week out for Bristol.
Yeah, I think Doug said it a few months ago that Urin's got a big error in him every game, and I think that's true. I think in the long term, Randall's a better player, but you're probably right in this instance. You might edge Kerr if you know, if you sum the two up. But I just, you know, it's not to say Quins don't have good players, and you know, Tyrone Green's looked really good in attack, although his sort of classic fullback play hasn't been quite so good. He dropped a few balls against Bath.
He was almost last weekend as well.
Yeah. Dom Brandt obviously is a really good player, but you know, Bristol have got some real resources in the back row.
Yeah.
You just think they're going to overpower them somehow. Quins are probably where they were they're probably at the top end of their expectations for the season.
Well, it's like they're like Northampton were last year, where they sort of fell into the playoffs and didn't really have any expectations of winning.
Yeah. I think for Quins, though, if had Brown had not been suspended, had Esterhazy not been suspended, you know, all of a sudden you look at Kerr, Smith, Esterhazy, Marchant, Brown at fullback, it starts to look like they've got a bit of a game plan. At the moment, I don't see who they play at 12 that's going to worry Bristol at all.
No.
And I think, and that's where I think it falls down for Quins. Add to that, as you mentioned, the back row. You know, you don't know who their starting back row is going to be. Dom Brandt's going to play 8. Would it be Chisholm at 6? Lorday? Luke Wallace played last weekend, if I'm right.
Yeah, I mean, the kid Kenningham's a good player, but, you know, he's coming up against Earl or Thomas or Lewis-Tua. You know, they're all, you know, they're much further on in their development. I think even with Brown, I mean, the way Bristol play kind of negates a fullback like Brown because they don't really kick it. You know, when they played Leicester, they didn't kick it to Stewart at all because they knew he'd catch it. They tried to turn Nadolo.
Yeah.
And when they were kicking, they weren't kicking the territory. They were almost using it as an attacking weapon. So, you know, your two wingers are going to have to be very sharp. But if Bristol feel that they're going to punch gaps, then they won't be kicking much at all.
Yeah, and I think it's likely that they'll probably spend a lot of time with ball in hand. And if Quins try and do the same, that's where Dan Thomas, Earl, Lua-Tua, you know, whoever of those play, Nathan Hughes will probably start and then come off. You know, Bristol will probably go after the breakdown in the knowledge that Quins will probably have to run it pretty much from anywhere because they won't want to kick it to Piatow or to Malins or to who's been, you know, Malins has been superb wherever he's played across the back line for Bristol. Morahan, which is probably a likely back three with O'Connor and Rajarandra in the midfield. So,
I mean, Purdy.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, they might be better off kicking the ball to them if they do it well, because when they were running the ball out against Leicester, they did get themselves into trouble a couple of times because they really weren't kicking the ball away and they were running perhaps more than they should have done. And that if they can get a kick chase nailed, that might be almost their best opportunity, but that is massively high risk.
Yeah, and you're relying on very good execution on a high risk kick game like that. You're relying on good execution from your kicker and a good chase to back it up, and the presence of mind in the back row to be turning the ball over.
To be honest, whatever Quins do, whatever game plan they put in, they're going to have to execute that at 100% to have a chance. Because, as we say, they're just further back in their development than Bristol are. And they don't have, and they're almost a similar team to Bristol. So they're going to be, they're not going to bend Bristol in the way that maybe Sale would, because Sale would play completely differently to Bristol. Whereas they're both playing to similar strengths.
The other thing is that there's a high chance that, a high degree of probability, in fact, that one of these teams is going to get out to a really good start. And if it's Quinns that get three tries up in the first 15 minutes, then you've got a game on. I think that's the only, I think the first 10 minutes is going to be blood and thunder, and that will pretty much decide the rest of the game, really.
But, yeah.
I mean, you're going to hate it then.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
It's going to be super, like, tackle's optional. Literally, probably a game of touch.
There'll definitely be a red card because all the offloading, someone will miss time a tackle on an offloading player or something like that. So I'm pretty sure there's going to, if you can get money on a red card, I would put it on this game.
We've got the two semi-finals that we want though, haven't we? Like you say in boxing that styles make fights, but like as far as rugby matches go, it makes for two more interesting games with the two styles of teams, doesn't it? Or the four styles of teams, should I say?
I wasn't listening, to be fair.
I think it depends what you prefer, doesn't it? You know, if you wanted two clashes of styles, then you'd be better off having the semi-finals the other way around, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I just wanted to be an excellent Bristol final, so I actually liked both the teams in it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, other than the people in Manchester and the people in Southwest London, I think most people want a Bristol Exeter final, don't they? They know that they're the best two sides. And, you know, if you were to canvass, what is it, 120% of the Premiership? So 100% of the, 80% of the Premiership. I can't do maths. It's the outcome of this.
Shocker.
If you canvass all the other fans of the Premiership outside of those top four, you would think that Bristol and Exeter would be the people that people wanted to see in the final. Okay, great. Thanks.
That's a statement. Russ, ask me a question.
Oh, fuck off.
We thought that was quite profound, so
left me to hang.
Let it
set. You're
at yourself, maybe your shit questions.
Oh, bore off, you fucking midget. talking of shambles, you see the Premiership Rugby have now withdrawn and cancelled 10,000 tickets for the Prem Final next week. The overarching thing is because it's due to COVID numbers and what they were expecting to have and or have available to be able to get people into Twickenham. I heard elsewhere that they'd actually, when they opened the ticket ballot up, a large portion of tickets was hoovered up by corporate
houses, people who drive Land Rovers, people who shop at Fortnum and Mason.
Correct. All of those people. So that when it came to the final, none of the people that a very small amount of people that actually support any of the teams that made the final could actually go.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they've said, well, we'll cancel 10,000 worth of tickets, which were the 10,000 that they put out on general sale. And then they're going to reallocate 5,000 each to the clubs that win the semi-finals. So they haven't cancelled. Everyone's saying, oh, look, they've cancelled 10,000 tickets. Those 10,000 tickets that have been cancelled are being reallocated 5,000 each to the two clubs that win semi-finals. They fucked it.
Wow. So it's probably no consolation if you've got one of the tickets.
Absolutely not.
How long have we been doing this podcast?
well, we're into our sixth year, are we? Is this right?
Yeah, you still seem surprised at rugby's ability to fuck everything up.
Oh no, I'm not surprised. I'm just sharing that level of information with you. Yeah, there's a couple of other sort of slight bits I want to talk very briefly out about in rugby. But before we go on to that, what we'll do is a very quick prediction for Bristol Quinns, Ben.
Bristol easily.
Doug?
Bristol, comfortably, yeah.
Yeah. I agree. So we're looking at a Bristol semi-final. Didn't get that, mate.
So Harlequins by 10, then.
Harlequins by 10. And Sale by 4.
Purposes of a joke.
Well, when you have to repeat yourself 3 times, mate, because you travel to having Wi-Fi, it doesn't really work. couple of quick things, as I say. Did you see the news report from the American news outlet about Tom Youngs this week?
Yes.
Where they said Leicester Tigers prostitute Tom Youngs.
That can be taken a number of ways, couldn't it?
It could be. I mean, I would like to take it. The best.
Depends what you pay, doesn't it?
Is he just stood outside the Mattioli Woods in a red leather miniskirt?
Imagine the scenes.
Stilettos and fishnets.
Incredible. That's what
cauliflower is.
5'6" wide. Here, love. And
not jacking dicks off straight.
wanking dicks off to the side.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Evenings to all the children listening.
Yeah, welcome to all your new listeners. And the other piece of amazing news, much better than Tom Young's being called a prostitute, is Josh McNally, friend of the pod, RAF corporal, armourer. Josh McNally has been called up to the England training squad, which I think is fantastic and very well deserved. He won Bath supporters or Bath player forward of the year at their recent awards ceremony.
When your team contains the forwards that team does, it's quite an honour.
Yeah, when you think about it, Mercer and Faletau and Miles Reed, and one player, Underhill, Bayless, Dunn. So fair play to Josh. Hopefully, you know, you never know what happens. I'm assuming it's a combination. Well,
the last thing happened, it was on the back of London Irish getting relegated, wasn't it? So you'd hope this time he can make an impression and kick on.
I hope so. I mean, he's probably in an age bracket that Eddie isn't really looking at, and if you're an English qualified lock, you know, with any substance,
all of a sudden we're not strong at lock, are we? We've gone sort of backwards in that regard, and he fits the sort of George Cruz model of tight head lock, doesn't he?
He does. He's what you would say unfashionable, but the way he sidestepped Danny Kerr against Quinns, that was a joy to behold. So, you know, hopefully, you never know. You never know what's going to happen, do you? Obviously, the rave ribbons suspension stands in his favour. Obviously, Charlie Yules is well thought of within the England setup. So, we'll see. We'll see. But there you go. Right. Any other business?
Well,
Ben.
Before we get into the rugby, out of the rugby, I know this won't go down well with you two, but after all that talk of Ealing all year, it did amuse me that Saracens absolutely scorched earth them.
Oh, yeah. We ought to mention that, hadn't we?
Yeah.
60-0 in the semi-final.
Ealing were their own worst enemies, really. They could have easily scored 3 or 4 tries. Knocked on over the line. Had a couple of 5-metre line-outs. Itoje pinched a couple. They had opportunities. But look. Saracens will do that to pretty much 7 of the Premiership teams.
Yeah.
So let's not, you know, write Ealing off. I don't think they're as bad as 60-0 suggests.
No, I don't think so either. It was just, you know, I think rumours of the demise were a little bit overdone. I think it will make the Premiership quite interesting next year if they're able to put in performances like that.
I think the thing you've got to recognise with that Saracens team is as well, they've not announced any signings yet.
No.
I mean, fuck knows who they're going to get. I mean, they could literally get anyone.
Well, they'll have Earl and Malins back, won't
they? Yeah.
So, they're, you know,
back.
Ezekiel back.
They've lost Rhodes. Rhodes has retired.
I was going to say Rhodes is retired. And
Is Lazowski coming back, or is this a permanent transfer?
Yeah, Lazowski's coming back.
I think Rhodes was a fantastic player for them for probably 5 or 6 years. So, you know, fair play to him. Quite a big favourite of mine. But yeah, it's going to make the league interesting because, like you say, the finalists, you could have predicted them after about 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe next year it might make the semi-finals at least a little bit more interesting.
But then does it if nobody can come up into the Premiership? What's the point?
Well, I honestly believe that they're both going to get promoted anyway.
What, this season?
Yeah.
It does flag up something, doesn't it? Because if you think they're going to be, if there's 13 teams, that means there'll have to be a bye week, which means there'll have to be bye weeks at the end.
Like the other two top divisions.
14.
In Europe, 14 teams. They've expanded the Champions Cup to 8 teams. So two more into the Challenge Cup would give you 6 teams in the Challenge Cup, which is effectively what they had last year anyway. So
what do you make randomly of this, the Super Rugby, the South African Super Rugby sides joining the Pro 14?
Well, it's a desperate, it's pretty transparent. It's a sort of desperate chance to make a bullshit league relevant. And all it's going to do is make that bullshit league even more bullshit.
Even more bullshit. And there's also talk of them being incorporated into the Champions Cup, isn't there?
Well, I'm not opposed to that because I don't care about the Champions Cup.
Fair enough. I mean, that endeth that discussion. Any other rugby chat before we move on? Okay. Ben, any other business?
I think yours is going to be TV related as well, but if you get the chance, Clarkson's Farm is really quite entertaining on Amazon Prime. So Jeremy Clarkson, the farmer that runs his estate, retires. So Clarkson decides to give it a go. And thoroughly enjoyed it with hilarious results.
From a farming point of view, Ben, how does Jeremy get on?
Jeremy doesn't get on very well. However, he does have a helper who reminds me of about 25% of the people I know, which perhaps makes it a little bit more familiar for me. But Jeremy's perhaps not a natural would be the phrase I'd use.
Oh, Jeremy. Oh, well, Doug, any other business from you?
There was something, but I can't remember it now.
Do you want me to go next while you remember it?
Yeah, go on.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about GB News, which is arguably one of the most amateurish setups I think I've seen for national television trying to pretend to be relevant. But more than that, it's always funny when news presenters read out comedy names. And Mike Oxlong is one of my favourites ever. And then for another news anchor to go on a bit of a rant and tell people that they're stupid and childish and all sorts of stuff, it just makes me laugh. So GB News, you know, anybody that thinks it was going to be any good is obviously sadly mistaken.
Well, look, on that, the undertaking of making a TV show is extremely difficult. When you do it on a budget, it's even harder. And when you do it on a platform that, or when your premise is based on a platform that people will take pleasure in ridiculing, it's even harder. I'm pretty sure that the people that are working on it are doing the best they can. The content isn't something I agree with, but also at the same time, like, Channel 4 was ridiculed when it came out, Channel 5 was ridiculed when it came out, and this has been ridiculed when it came out, and, you know, Dave was ridiculed when that first emerged. No, I don't agree with the sentiment of the channel, but I mean, is it any more right wing than Channel 4 is left wing? Yeah, Channel 4 has just been around for 30 years.
Fair comment. I mean, did it is pretty much surely what everybody expected it to be, though, isn't it? Like, it's no different to what...
What it is a new platform and a new channel that's come out and is trying to make content for a section of society that it perceives is underrepresented. Excuse me. There you go. And it's bloody difficult to make telly. So, and the problem you've got is that a lot of the people that will poke fun at it are the people that will go onto Twitter and, you know, it's the Josh What's-His-Faces and the Sam Lanas of the world that are going to comment about GB News, aren't they? Isn't it? You know, people are vastly and wholly unqualified to pass comment on the quality of a TV production, such as yourself or us.
I was going to say, probably me as well, to be fair.
You've just lumped me into a group of people.
On this subject, you are in that group. I'll keep saying it, just in case I get tired of being a right-wing Nazi, which I am. You know, it's the subject matter is not to my liking, but doesn't mean I'm going to ridicule a group of people that are doing their best, probably under very trying circumstances. They're probably not getting paid much money. It's just fucking hard to make telly.
I think they're trying to make it Fox News, but on about a hundredth of the budget, aren't they?
Neil is not Rupert Murdoch. No, he's probably got a few quid, but he hasn't got a few billion quid.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. I'm not sure we need it. So,
but you're not sure you need it because you don't sit on that side of the fence. You're happy with The Guardian and Channel 4.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is the problem, the whole problem with this society, that, like, you're the arbitrator of what we need and what we don't need.
If only I was, Doug, we'd be having a lot less red cards.
The verbal minority are the arbitrators of what people need and don't need. And it's not entirely right. Do you know what? If there wasn't a market for it, it wouldn't exist. So.
And right. There's Doug's interview for GB News.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Doug.
Doug's after some
camera. Everything I've just said. Now, I'm not going to... Those people... That, you know, there was a comment that I can't remember. Somebody that I follow on Twitter, another TV guy, said something about it, and another guy came back and was like, "Oh, I can't believe these people are selling their souls to talk about this stuff." And I just replied with a quote that came from Floyd Mayweather, which is that you can't feed your kids with principles. You know what I mean? These people have got to earn a living.
The acid test of it would be
in lunatics. They're just making telly. They probably don't, you know, I go to rugby matches and cricket matches where I don't care about the outcome, but I still go. Don't have to love everything I do.
Women's tennis.
About the fucking women's tennis I've sat through, hating every minute of it. What am I supposed to love it? Because I work on it. Do you think that people that work in abattoirs love it?
Maybe I suggest they do.
Back off these people. They're just trying to make a bit of money to, you know, put a roof over their heads.
To me, the test will be how much of it is reporting and how much of it is opinion. Because from what you see of Fox News, a lot of that is people trying to... They're your sort of Tucker Carlson's and people like that who are very much telling people what to think. Whereas, you know, if it's reporting from a certain slant, well, that, like you say, Channel 4 reports from a certain slant as well. And, you know, they do teach you at school to try and recognise what that slant is that people are trying to persuade you with. But I think if it becomes more of a sort of lecture kind of television, then
don't watch it.
Yeah.
And what does it matter if it is? We listen to fucking Piers Morgan every morning for five years.
Yeah, exactly.
So what does it matter? Just don't watch it. Let the people make their TV shows, make their money from it, and do their shit, and then switch it off. Because ultimately, that's, again, I'll use the same word, but it's the arbitrator of success, isn't it? whether people watch it or not. And if they don't, it won't exist.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm in a group of people with Gardner and Lana.
Yeah.
is a comment I'd never thought I'd say.
As we all know, you are a cunt.
Well, of that, there is no doubt. And I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
Right, Doug, what have you got to say?
I don't need to do one now. I've said my piece. Come at me, all 40 of you.
We've had some more really cool interest in the Mallover Invitational. So make sure if you want to come down in October the 9th, for the Mallover Invitational. Also, if anybody out there knows anybody who wants to get involved with some sponsorship for a set of jerseys that I'm going to let Doug loose on designing. Provided we could get a sponsor.
Red armbands, little white circle in the middle.
Yeah. provided we could get a sponsor, I would love Genius. To arrange. I'd like to arrange a set of jerseys that we would look to sell off to all the players at the end to raise a bit of money for Rugby Against Cancer. So if you know anybody out there that's looking to do a bit of sponsorship for tax deduction reasons, then please get in touch.
Or because they like charity, one or the other.
Well, whatever. I'm not fussy, mate. I'm looking for about 600 quid. That's how much a set of shirts cost. 23 shirts. And every single one will hopefully get sold to raise money for Rugby Against Cancer. So if you're a business and you want to sponsor it, let me know. But yeah, looking forward to it. Things are coming together nicely. Finally, Ben, have a lovely birthday on Sunday. Ben is 40. Before we pod again, tipping the balance into middle age. And
yeah. I never got a shout out on my 40th.
You fucking did. We probably weren't even podcasting then. We might have been punching chatting, or I don't know what we were doing. Was it 2 years ago you were 40?
Yes, Russ, it was 2 years ago I was 40.
Well, I remembered that. And it's your birthday like 2 weeks Sunday, isn't it? So just how's your fucking mouth? You can have one next week.
5th of July for everyone out there.
That was quite a difference in the sentiments for us there, wasn't there?
I'm just fed up of fucking dog shit. Anyway, we're going. Enjoy the Premiership semi-finals. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we will see you next week. Go well.
Fed up.
Sports Social Podcast Network.